Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Parent Talk with Bev. This interview that you're about to listen to comes with a warning. It is uncomfortable listening, as the person I interview, Stephanie, talks about surviving traumatic childhood. I feel that I need to signpost people before they listen to the interview to some organisations that might be able to assist, and they're based in the UK. One is mind.org.uk, that's mind.org.uk, and here you will find a list of support organisations that will include counselling and therapy support for those who have suffered abuse, whether they're dealing with that now or in the past. So as we listen to this interview, please be aware that it is uncomfortable listening, but this is a space where we share our experiences in the hope that it helps someone somewhere. So this is Surviving Trauma Part One.
Hi, and welcome to Parent Talk hashtag with Bev. You know, I'm a black mother of African Caribbean descent, living in London with my two daughters. Tonight, though, or today, I'm here joined by a guest, and we're going to be talking about the story of surviving trauma in childhood. Now, warning, some of this may be uncomfortable, but let's hear the voice of someone who has come through a difficult times and who is willing to share some of their story in the hope that it helps someone somewhere. So I'd like to introduce my guest. Would you like to let everyone know who you are?
Hello, my name's Stephanie.
Stephanie, so thank you so much for, you know, coming along to do this little tete-a-tete with me.
Thank you.
So what was your childhood like?
It was a mixed bag of trauma, joy, and eventual peace. Mm. It was a confusing kaleidoscope, so to say, of all kinds of different emotions as I was growing up. Unfortunately, I went through very, very traumatic events from the age of four, and the perpetrator was my mother. And I'd not spent much time with her before I met her when I was four.
She was your biological mother.
Yes, she is my biological mother, yes. Mm-hmm. I spent time in Ghana prior to coming back to England. I was about 3.5 when I came back to England. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the abuse began with my mother just before I started nursery or infant school.
Okay, so that's really quite difficult to hear, but I'm gonna ask, why was it traumatic? What kind of abuse? Because people's minds are gonna go to sexual abuse, but we're not really talking about that. What kind of abuse, or what kind of trauma did you experience?
I suffered with physical abuse. Mm-hmm. I'll explain the type of abuse. Okay. As we go along. Mm-hmm. I also suffered with mental abuse, again perpetrated by my mum. Mm-hmm. Spiritual abuse, because she used the Bible and Christ's teachings to justify her abuse, towards me. And this caused great confusion from a very, very young age, and great trauma, because once the abuse started, I lost all trust in my mother. If anything had happened to me outside of the home, she wasn't the one I would be able to go to because she was also a perpetrator of the abuse that I incurred when I was in her care, if you want to call it care. So,
I mean, obviously, you know, you grow up with her. But give us an example. Could you give us an example of something that she did that caused trauma for you?
Okay.
I mean, yeah, you talked about she beat you, and I understand that, you know, because I think all West Indian families, from my generation anyway, when they beat us, they weren't beating us with their hand. They were beating us with anything that they found at their disposal at the time. But yeah.
With my abuse, yes, that included severe beatings with various instruments around the home, like you've just described. It could have been the belt, things from the kitchen, whatever came to hand, depending on what part of the house we were in.
Yeah.
So if it's in a bedroom, it could be she just pick up a shoe or a belt. If it's in the kitchen, she would pick up the sink plunger, a ladle, anything that would come to hand, she would use it.
Yeah.
And in my case, it was for minor infractions. The abuse prior to me starting primary school was more specifically geared towards her preparing me for my academics when I would start primary school. Prior to me coming to England, my grandparents had already taught me. I already knew how to count. I already knew my alphabet. You know, I already knew how to write my name and, you know, short sentences and things like that. However, my mum had her own regime and her own agenda. And she had her own extremely high standards. And prior to introducing any tasks that she would expect me to do academically, like it could be just normal English comprehension or a maths equation, she would immediately threaten me and say that if I got any maths question incorrect or if I spelled a word incorrectly, I'd be beaten or I'd be punished in another way, which I'll go on to describe. So that would instantly make me nervous. Anything I already did know would be completely erased from my mind.
Yeah, it would fly out of your head. Yeah.
And just like a typical example, I'll be told, you know, to recite some times tables. Even from a very young age, I'd be expected to know the answer fluently. And unfortunately, when you've been threatened already prior to starting your work, it's very nerve-wracking. And the only thing in your mind, the only thing in my mind at the time was, if I get this wrong, I'm going to get beaten really badly. It wasn't just the beating. One of the types of abuse she would inflict on me was to concoct a mixture of ginger and chili, which she would grind the fresh produce in a pestle and mortar, like in a bowl with the pestle, to grind the ingredients. And one of those punishments, the punishments which it included was to insert the ginger and chili concoction into my front and back passage.
Sorry, I'm sitting here with my mouth open because I wasn't aware. Listen, when I was growing up, I knew that some friend of mine, mother, had threatened to do that if she'd had sex. Yeah? This wasn't about if you did get your times table them wrong. You understand? So that is really traumatic.
Yes. And the way it was inflicted was very similar to what people describe as rape. Because of where it was inserted. So it will be in my front passage and my back passage whenever she felt the need to do so. And it will be for these very minor infractions, whether it's doing my maths, doing comprehension, English comprehension, housework. If she instructed me to do some housework and I didn't do it to her standard, the ginger and the chili pepper concoction would be, I wouldn't say the last resort, but yes, it was almost every single week till I was about 17.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. And then what she would do is, because she used to go to church every single week, one of her ways to enable her to continue to use this type of punishment would be when we come back from church, I would have to write an essay about the sermon. Yeah. And she would also provide Bible passages, which I would have to interpret. And if it's not to her own mindset as to how she understood what was in the Bible, the ginger and the beatings.
So I'm sitting here, and I almost feel like I wish I hadn't asked you the question. Do you understand?
I think with these ones, you have to just go for the jugular and just tell the truth. So that's why I'm saying it as raw as it is.
But I thank you. I thank you for that, because sometimes you never know when people say that they've had a trauma. Everybody's idea of a trauma is different. That's why I asked you to expand upon it.
Yeah.
So, you know, any time that you kind of feel uncomfortable about any questions I'm asking, you know, just say no. You understand? Because this is not what this is about. Yeah. It's to share so that if there is somebody out there who is suffering in some way, that they know that there's somebody else who's willing to speak about some of the things. So how did this affect you then? Because, you know, this is quite severe. And as you were saying, for minor infractions, like if you didn't get your timetable right, or if in her mind that you hadn't written correctly what you'd heard from the sermon at church, or interpretation of the Bible. So it was really at her behest, really.
Yes.
So how did that affect you growing up? Because you said this went on till you was not 17.
Yes. I'll correct that slightly. I left home at 17.
Okay.
The last event with the ginger was, I was about 16. And I eventually found the courage to leave home for good at 17. I'd run away quite frequently for a few years prior to that, but unfortunately I was always sent back home. How it affected me,
You were always sent back home.
So whoever I ran to, so if it was a family member or a friend, I was always sent back home to my mum, with the promise that they will speak to her, and with her pretending that she will never do it again,
right?
You know, that kind of thing. And unfortunately, when I was sent back home, she would continue the abuse, because now she knows that I've gone to tell somebody.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're going to get even worse treatment because you've actually had the audacity to tell somebody. Well, first of all, you ran away, and then these people, you must have had to tell them something.
Yes,
then
I did.
They've brought you back. So you've shamed me as a mother in front of these people. So of course I'm gonna make sure that you pay for that.
Yes, correct. And this, I mean, like I said, this started when, just before I started primary school. And so therefore, even in normal lessons in school, I would consider, at the time, that I was quite bright, because I was taught very well whilst I was in Ghana. My grandparents were absolutely amazing. They prepared me in every possible way for my time back in England whilst I was in Ghana. So when I'd be at school, if the teacher would ask a question, I'd be too, I wouldn't have the confidence to give an answer.
Right.
And because I feared that if I got it wrong and it got back to my mum, that yes, because obviously school reports are written and they write down, you know, your the child's progress, and any tiny, I wouldn't say negative comment, I would say helpful comment from the teacher in order to encourage me to practice probably on certain areas of my academia to reach my full potential. When that report in written form is sent back to my mum, the abuse just continued. It would just be beaten. So you're going to school and you're not participating in the lessons. You know, you're not showing any you're not showing any confidence. You do know the answers to these questions, and you're going there to waste time at school. Basically, that's the interpretation she got.
Yeah.
So I was always nervous. I was always, I lacked confidence in anything that I was taught. I was timid. In fact, I actually made friends quite easily. Mm. And I've managed to keep a lot of my friends from primary school. We've still got a relationship to even to this day. So that, you know, making friends and keeping friends was never much of an issue. And in fact, that was actually a blessing, because I was able to then confide in my, with my friends as to what was going on at home. And I have to say that those friends of mine, and others, and many others all the way throughout my childhood, my teenage years, college years, they were absolutely amazing, like just warriors, because they always found a way to make my life enjoyable, even though they knew what was going on at home. Because we were children, they weren't able to take official steps into reporting it, especially in primary school. I will get to when I got to secondary school, when things progressed a bit for me in regards to reporting the abuse that was going on at home. However, it was almost like I had to live a double life, because throughout the abuse, my mum did not allow me to, she didn't want me to have friends.
Right.
She didn't want me to play outside with my friends. She just didn't want me to enjoy life in any form unless it was arranged by her.
Yeah.
You know, and so if my friends would come and knock for me, you know, during over the weekends or during the summer holidays and what have you, it was constantly a battle at the doorstep between my friends and my mother, and with me in the background, terrified, you know, more or less telling my friends, go away, you know, don't come to my door, you know, I'm going to get into trouble. Yeah, and they were like, no, we want you to have 5 minutes, half an hour, 1 hour of just pure happiness, just bare joke. You know,
if could you, because even if you'd come out and then you'd go home, you know, even if she had relented and allowed you to go out for the half an hour, the hour, and you had joy, were you not worrying about what was going to happen to you when you got back home?
Of course.
The price you were going to pay for this?
Of course.
Done embarrassed her for them to knock on the door to come. How dare they? And you've put her in this position.
Yes, it did worry me, because obviously once I did get out with my friends, whether it's for 5 minutes, half an hour, it would take me a while to relax and enjoy myself, you know, running around, playing and things like that. And usually just before I knew when I'd have to go home, I'd more or less be in tears and my friends would be, you know, trying to reassure me that, look, there'll be another time when you can come out and play.
And encourage you.
Yeah, and if, I'll give an example, you know what children are like. We, you know, when we go out, we play knockdown ginger, we get up to all sorts, you know, and you've always got that one child who wants to grass you up on just a tiny little thing. You could have just said a swear word or something, you know, because you're chilling out with your friends and you're running around and you're just having a good time, and you've got one, that one friend who would go and knock on your mum's door and say, she just swore, or she just stuck her tongue out, or whatever, you know, and that would get back to my mother, and then I wouldn't be allowed out for an extended period of time again. So basically what would happen was, would be my friends and I would sort of concoct a story to go before I go home, so that the any punishment I get wouldn't be as severe, as well. Then again, it was always severe. So,
you know, don't be sorry. The reality is that the struggle for some parents is trying to grow their children up, especially if you're from the Caribbean or from a non-white background, where trauma and beatings are something that have been handed down for generations to our people. Yeah. So you don't know any different. Like my mother, she was beaten very badly by my grandfather. So when it came down to me, I was getting beaten bad too. You understand? Mm-hmm. But you don't talk about these things because you say, oh, this will pass. And you know, other people that I've spoken to, they say, oh, well, I've had similar experiences where we've had to get our friends to concoct stories so whatever our mother wouldn't, da da da. You understand what I mean? But behind closed doors, you really do not know Wagwan.
Yes. And we would have to come outside and more or less pretend like nothing is going on. Because obviously when you're at school, you have to be on your best behaviour. In our day, I grew up in the 80s. I was born in the 70s, but I grew up in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And in primary school especially, it was difficult to go to a teacher and tell them, especially in London, mm-hmm. I can only speak for London, it was difficult to go to a teacher in those days when, before 1987, it was still law that teachers could also smack you.
Yes.
They changed the law in 1987. So you couldn't, if you did go to your teacher, they would be like, well, if your mum beat you that badly, then you must have done,
something really
bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
you couldn't win.
You couldn't win. Going to a teacher in those days was just, it wasn't, you just couldn't get any help.
And the thing is, I think people listening would say, oh, you know, now, you know, teachers have got too much, because if they see a bruise on your skin, you know, social services are called in, and, you know, people are more paranoid about, well, some people, not all, are a bit more paranoid about it. But to understand that in 87, that before that period, corporal punishment was definitely what was allowed in British schools.
Yes.
The cane and anything else, because I remember when I used to, have I ever been caned? I don't even know. I have. Mm-hmm. But my mother would be like, what you've just said.
Mm-hmm.
If for them to do that to you, you must have done something wrong. So you never brought anything home.
Yes.
You never went to school to be rescued. Do you understand? So what changed for you when you went to secondary school? Because you said primary school, you kind of managed. You were still being traumatically beaten at home and, you know, other things that were happening. So when you got to secondary school, did things improve a bit? Just a bit?
Just a little bit. Because by then, in primary school, we're taught stranger danger. So what happens is, we were only taught to report any crimes against ourselves for strangers.
Strangers, yes.
We were never taught in primary school to that if the perpetrator of your abuse was your parent or a relative or a family friend, that you could report them to the police or to the social services or anything like that. It was in secondary school that I was able to get that information from my friends because they could actually physically see. So these were extra friends that I made once I got to secondary school. And they, during PE, you know, or swimming lessons, we, you know, some of our flesh will be shown. And my friends used to see cuts and bruises all over me. And they would say, Steph, what happened? You know, and I'd explain to them what happened to me at home. And they'd be like, right, we're going to go and tell the teacher. So we went to tell the teacher. The teacher then told the social services. The first time I ever reported it to the teacher in secondary school, I was 13.
Right.
I was about 12, 13. And the teachers were... I have to say they were brilliant. They did contact the social services on my behalf.
Right.
They even contacted the police after I explained to them everything. However, when it got to the attention of the social services, that's when things went completely bad because they didn't take any action.
Let's stop right there. The reason I'm saying let's stop right there is because we are already 25 minutes in, okay? And I do want to hear how things changed. And I'm sure my listeners would. Would you be prepared to come back and speak to us?
Yes.
I feel really bad that I'm kind of stopping you here.
Yes.
You understand what I mean?
Yes.
But, you know, if you feel able, I think we would learn so much more about what's happened from secondary school and what some strategies that you might have used, but also how you were feeling about certain things as well. And especially as you've just left us on a cliffhanger about social services being aware, but you're not getting the help that you needed. So not only are you traumatized by what's happening at home, the system sounds like it's letting you down.
Yes.
All right, listen, people, right? May I have to come back? You know, there's definitely going to be a part two of this. If this is going to help anybody, if you know any young people, you know, share this podcast, and parents as well. I think, you know, I'm not trying to sound judgmental on anybody, but I think we need to be aware that some of the things that we do to our young people, it don't help them at all. And, you know, if we want them to grow up to be well-rounded adults who can cope with the system that we're living under, then we're going to have to make some changes about what we're doing and how we're raising our kids. Trauma is trauma, little or large. But I hope that hearing Stephanie's and I hate to even use story, but I'm saying, I'm hoping that hearing Stephanie speak to us helps us all to reflect on what we're doing and how we can love better with the ones that we've been given as gifts, which are our children. So I'm just going to say it's time for us to finish this podcast. If you want to hear part two, you're going to have to tune in. Thanks again to my guest, Stephanie. Thank you so much for your honesty and your clarity of telling us some of your experience. We'll be back with part two. But until then, I want to just say stay blessed. And stay
so you've
safe.
Listened to part one interview, and Stephanie will be back for part two, which will be released next week. If anything she has talked about has impacted you, there is the Samaritans helpline. It's a free phone number in the UK. The number is 116123. And that's for adults. Oh, it's for anybody, really. And if you're a young person who, or if you've somehow allowed somebody to listen to this who is suffering a situation, there is Childline where they can call and the number is 0800 1111, and that's Childline 0800 1111 for those who are 18 and under. Thank you for listening, and tune in to part 2 next week. Be safe. Stay blessed. Until next time, we're out.